You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 587, recorded for February 5th, 2019. Streaming. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. If you're going to like what we have in store this week, we're going to be talking about live streaming. A lot of people are talking about it, thinking about it. Is it for you, for your congregation, for your live events? We're going to welcome Philip Wells to the show, who's been doing a lot of work with congregations, getting all set up to do live streaming, the software, the hardware. He's even set up a great website as a resource for everybody. All the other usual stuff, including Picks of the Week, Wells Now, News and Tech, Ministry Resources, and some great community feedback, especially about Facebook posting practices that you're not going to want to miss. All that and more coming up. Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to Wells Tech. So good that you decided to spend a little time with us. And we're on episode 587. Great conversation lined up. And to have a conversation, usually it takes two, and we have two. Sally Draper's joining me as usual. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. I'm coming to you from Pea Soup, Louisiana, Pea where soup. It's been foggy for like 3 days straight. It is like hard to see out there. Still, middle of the day.
We had, and that's a good sign when we get fog in winter, because that means that the air temperature's warmed up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So after our Arctic blast, we had a day of fog, which was actually a little bit refreshing. So, ice on the way, I hear, tonight. So we have that in store too. It's just a mystery, kind of an adventure here each and every day when we look at the weather. So.
Yep, it's an adventure when I look at your weather, too, and I'm just glad it's you.
Right. Yes, well, you get 4 stars for smart choices. So. What are we talking about today, Sally?
I'm excited for today's topic. It's all about live streaming. And, you know, Martin, I was thinking back to about 2004, I believe, maybe 2005, when we were at a conference together about communication, mm-hmm. and someone was talking about podcasting and video channels through the internet and things like that. And it was so brand new and so exciting to see these communication channels opening up that had previously been so expensive and so unreachable. And here we are in 2019, and you can live stream yourself on Facebook or YouTube. You can easily do it with your smartphone even. So times have changed, and it's exciting to see people thinking about these tools for use in ministry.
It's somewhat marginalized traditional broadcast channels. I hear a lot less conversation from congregations getting on local cable access and those kinds of things, as they recognize that they don't have to necessarily do that, and maybe their audience isn't even what it once was there. So they're recognizing that the internet is what the expectation maybe is for people to want to tune in or see what you're all about. And like you mentioned, the tools are there. So what we did, one of the reasons that we're kind of talking about live streaming is we talk about it off and on this show, is that we had a friend of the show, Philip Wells, come to us and say he's had some recent, very positive experiences helping congregations get into this business. And I'd have to say I probably get, maybe a conversation a week on this very topic. So very timely. In fact, late last week, I referenced one of the links that that Philip shared with us during our interview with him, which we did last week or a couple weeks ago in anticipation of this show. And it's great to have somebody in the trenches who kind of has to deal with the realities of live streaming. We kind of deal with it in the abstract and kind of collect resources and put links on web pages. But somebody who's had to kind of recognize that not every situation is the same. There are more more than one way to skin a cat, and he brings some good resources to the table. And he was, it was very good of him to lay some of his wisdom out there for us, and we were able to capture it in an interview. So maybe we can play that interview and then regroup, talk a little bit about some of the things that he brought up, including a website that he built just for the occasion. So let's listen to our conversation with Philip Wells. Joining us today is Philip Wells, a lay member at Peace Lutheran Church in North Mankato, Minnesota. And not just the first time you've been on the show. Welcome back, Philip.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, those people who don't know who Philip Wells is, other than the great last name.
Yeah, I struggle a little bit with how to tell people like what I do and who I am, but for the most part, I am just a video guy. I went to school and touched on video to some extent. Didn't really want to do broadcast, didn't want to go to Hollywood and do film, so I've just been finding other ways to do video stuff. I worked at Bethany Lutheran College for 6 years in the video department, where we did live streaming and a little bit of broadcast, a little bit of film stuff. And then I spent a year in China working at a school with a film program. And now I'm back in the States doing video production freelance work.
Excellent. Well, we are happy to have you joining us because we are talking about live streaming today. And that's an area that I think many people are beginning to pay more and more attention to. It's like we have the ability to be our own little television studios, it seems. So maybe orient people to how live streaming can have a place in a church's communications plans.
Yeah, something that I've kind of picked up on recently is I get the sense that as church bodies and as maybe even pastors and people leading worship, I get the sense we're not writing a lot of stuff down these days. And maybe I'm completely wrong in that sense, but we look back, we're always reading the stuff from the church fathers. We're always like figuring out which book Luther said this thing in, or he's got all his sermons and stuff like that. And I think today a lot of the sermons are kind of more off the cuff, or they don't have scripts. They have like bullet points that the pastors kind of go down. But we're at a point where it's really easy to record audio and video and to distribute that. And in my mind, recording and streaming video like this is the way we can archive a lot of these messages for the future.
Great point.
And so when we're doing video and stuff like that, it's also very, very easy today to broadcast video to the entire world. Like when you put your church service or your sermon on Facebook or YouTube or Vimeo or wherever, people around the world can tune in and often do, because the services that provide video content, they want live video. It's something they're always kind of pushing. So as soon as you start putting live stream video out there, it doesn't really matter what you're streaming. They start like notifying everybody, hey, here's something live that you can tune into right now, because they're looking for engagement on their platforms.
Philip, that's a great question, because one thing that I get a lot is, do we live stream or do we simply record and make available the archive stream? So you talked a little bit about one of the advantages. Do you see other advantages to having live versus something that's archived and available for on-demand viewing?
Well, at Peace Lutheran Church, which is an ELS congregation, we live stream our first service every Sunday, and then we put the video of the service and the sermon up on Vimeo for people to tune in later. But I know we have people in our congregation who can't always make it to church on Sunday morning, or we have people who kind of follow our congregation, but sometimes are like, you know, snowbirds. They're just not in town. They're not around, but they know people in our congregation. My parents live in a neighboring city, and sometimes they'll even tune in. They go to a Saturday night service, but on Sunday mornings, they'll tune in and kind of watch stuff as well sometimes. So in a sense, it fosters that community, and it allows you to include people who can't be there in person, whether they would normally be able to be there in person or not. So I think that's another benefit.
Yeah, personal story here. We live streamed when I was in Sleepy Eye, and we actually had someone watch a funeral from Australia. So that meant a whole lot to them to be able to be a part of their grandmother's funeral, even though they were living in Australia. So that worldwide reach is for real, folks. It definitely does happen. And I was reminded also, I'm sorry to dominate, but another story around the outreach in Vietnam and the big push right now to support that outreach. They actually made contact through live streaming of video services from Pastor Laura's church. I want to say it was in Kansas or somewhere. So just some cool connections that people make through live streaming.
I think that's your point there. That's huge. The fact that people in other countries around the world can tune in and watch even live stuff is kind of incredible. Having spent almost a full year in China, finding church services online was difficult. And it's one of those things where your options are kind of limited, because sometimes these websites work and sometimes these websites don't work. And, you know, in some sense, the more variety, the more options out there to stream or watch something back. If you are in a country where you don't have reliable internet access to some of these topics, that could also be a huge help.
Philip, talk to us a little bit about the technical side. A lot of people look at live streaming and think, well, we can't do that. We don't have the technical expertise, et cetera. What would somebody need to consider if they're thinking about getting into or trying out live streaming?
That's a great question. And the truth is, you could live stream your church service or even just your sermon from your cell phone if you wanted to. For the price of an internet connection at your church, I don't know if any of our pastors would do this, but if a pastor wanted to, they could take their smartphone, put it on a little tripod or a little stick next to their on the pulpit up near them, and when it's time for the sermon, they could hit live on Facebook and just preach normally with the phone's just kind of off to the side giving a side shot, and when the sermon's done, they can hit stop on Facebook, and they've just live streamed their sermon to anybody who wants to watch, and Facebook's going to archive that video for later. So in theory, you could do live streaming for free, basically, provided you have, you know, a cell phone or an internet connection at your church. On the other end of things, I mean, the easiest way to make a small fortune in video sometimes is to start with a large fortune. There's no limit to what you could spend on stuff. So obviously, as churches and nonprofits, we sometimes have limited budgets and we want to use our money wisely. This last year, I worked with Paul Fries and the ELS to put in a bunch of streaming systems in different churches. And we found a couple products that we really like. There's a brand of point and point tilt zoom cameras, PTZ cameras, that we really like. And depending on your feature set, you're talking $1,500 to $2,000 for your camera, and then you're gonna have to have a way to control the camera. So you got video controllers on top of that, and we've just been taking the video stream from the cameras and going into a computer and using software to mix it and then record and stream straight from that computer, and that simplifies the setup a little bit. If you wanted more of a production studio style setup, you can definitely go that route as well. That might be a little bit more expensive, but honestly, I've seen some stuff lately that almost puts it at the same price as a computer and to some extent.
So what camera and what software are you recommending?
Yeah, the PTZ Optics has a camera. They got a couple different models, either the SDI, which is the way video signal runs over SDI cable, which is a coax cable with a BNC end, but that's high-end video. Or their cameras also have HDMI out, and the new kind of video thing they're doing is video over Ethernet. And this is called NDI. It's kind of the next step up from SDI, I guess. But all of their NDI cameras are really neat because you send power over Ethernet, they send the video from the camera back over Ethernet, and you can control the cameras through Ethernet as well. So you're basically running a single cable to these cameras.
Okay.
And sorry, in terms of software, I really like Wirecast. Wirecast is Mac and PC kind of cross-platform. You have inputs for your different videos. You can click on which video you want to show up, and you know it kind of switches the video very easily, and it will stream and record. And the nice thing about Wirecast is it can stream to multiple locations. So if you wanted to stream to Facebook and YouTube and live stream or something like that, you could send video out to each platform.
And as I recall, Wirecast has a number of platforms or levels. There's a free version, but there's also paid versions that give you a few more features.
Yeah, I don't remember if they still have a free version or not.
Okay.
And so that is the caveat. Wirecast starts at about $700. And if there's a couple features where you may have to bump for the pro version, and that's $1,000 right there. That said, I have had very few problems with Wirecast, and if you are planning on doing this sort of recording and streaming, this is definitely software to at least consider. You can get a 30-day free trial and kind of run with it, make sure it does what you need to do, but I highly recommend it.
And I guess to round out our hardware conversation, you need some way to get the video into the computer. Do you have some kind of interface for that?
Yeah, if you get the newer models that support NDI, and they are a little bit more expensive, I think they're maybe $2,100, $2,200 or something like that for these cameras. If you get the NDI versions, you just have to have your computer hooked up to the same network switch.
That's one of the big advantages of that technology, right?
Yep. If you are doing SDI or HDMI, then you're going to need capture cards in your computer. Or you'd have to get a video switcher to switch the video going into your streaming box.
Which can be maybe even the difference in cost between an SDI and NDI, you know, camera. So that's a good consideration.
Philip, you mentioned something about video inputs and switching. Have you set up any multi-camera scenarios with your experience?
Yeah. So Peace Lutheran Church has a 3-camera setup. And that's over SDI, so we have our computer has 3 capture cards bringing the video into the computer. I worked with St. Paul's Lutheran Church in North Mankato, Minnesota this last summer, and they had a 4-camera video setup. And so we did 4 NDI cameras. They put 3 along the back, and they put 1 up closer to the front so they could maybe spin it and swivel back if there's a to watch maybe a wedding procession come up the aisle or something. And we went at NDI, so it was 1 cable to each camera, and we hooked it into a switch with power over Ethernet, and then we ran Wirecast to switch between the cameras.
Sweet.
The other thing I should say is if you do projection in your church, another benefit to Wirecast, and I guess some of these other programs would do that as well, but we put a little utility on their PowerPoint computer at St. Paul's, and it sends out the PowerPoint feed to Wirecast. So they don't have to point the camera at the screen. They can just switch to the actual feed coming in from the camera or from the PowerPoint.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about archiving then. So we've been talking about live for the most part. You capture this and you mentioned, well, Facebook will do that automatically. What if they don't go the Facebook route, and where would you maybe suggest hosting some of these videos for on-demand?
That's another good question. I know a lot of churches have been going to Vimeo, and I think that's a good option. Vimeo is sometimes a little slow, and as somebody who's lived abroad in a country where you can't always get to Vimeo easily, I have noticed, I did notice that Vimeo sometimes wouldn't load for me while I was in China. Sometimes it worked fine, though. Then I guess YouTube's another place to kind of throw stuff out there, but I don't know anyone who's putting full services on YouTube, and I don't know if YouTube would...
You have copyright issues.
Yeah, it would play there, you right? Mm-hmm. For that. I guess I shouldn't say I know. What MLC uses something for...
They use live stream.
They use live stream, okay. Mm-hmm.
Right, which is kind of a package, potential package, because they sell hardware as well that might be a solution. So, but what I'm hearing you saying is it's if you you can start small or you can plan for something a little bit more professional. But there is value in either route, right?
Yes. And you know, if you do want to start a little bit small, you could even just start with audio. I have a part-time job where I work every morning where I'm doing some really monotonous tasks. And I have found that being able to start my morning with listening to an audio Bible, listening to a couple sermons in podcast form, has been really beneficial to me, to the point where I'm even considering, like, how do I get podcasts in my car? You know, if I'm taking a short 15-minute drive across town, if I'm my podcast player can get me through a sermon in that time. And so I did want to mention, I think you guys talked about Anchor.fm back in 2016, was it?
February? Could be, right? Your memory's better than ours.
I did a quick search ahead of time because I wanted to know if you had mentioned it, but the Anchor platform has really grown in the last couple of years to the point where it is very easy to put a podcast out there. Excellent. They will even put it out on every service for you. So for Peace Devotions, the devotion series I edit for the ELS, we put out a podcast version, and they have it on 9 different platforms. If I wanted to, they could build a Alexa app for
sure.
I just set off my Echo.
We have a policy on this podcast. I think you have to buy us donuts now, just so you know.
Okay. That's only Siri, Sally.
Oh, well, I was trying. Anyway, so yeah, that's a new and up-and-coming platform to be able to have your stuff there. I think Wells is in that space now, right, Martin?
Right. Yeah, we have the Wells Daily Devotion. In fact, when you search on Wells on Alexa for... the flash briefing, two entries come up, our daily devotion and peace devotions from Philip Wells.
How about that?
Awesome.
Well, Philip, thank you so much for taking the time with us. It's exciting about what you're doing. And if somebody wanted to maybe get in touch with you, learn a little bit more, or maybe engage you to help them, how would they do that?
Yeah, in preparation for coming and talking to you guys, I set up a new domain name. Just for this, if you go to streammyworship.com.
Oh, wow.
That's really awesome.
Streammyworship.com. I'm going to go there right now. Is there anything there for us to see?
Yeah, there is a little bit of information. I got a link to a page of resources that I use with links to both free and paid items or software and a little bit more about hardware. And then at the bottom of the page, I got a contact form, and that would be the best way to get in touch with me.
Excellent. Nicely done. Very nice. Thank you, Philip. Really appreciate you taking the time to join us, and I'm sure our audience will be inspired to at least check this out. There's, again, you know, very few barriers, I think, to entry at this point, whether that be just for recording and or streaming, and kind of reaching beyond the physical walls of a congregation is easier than ever. So thanks for joining us and sharing that information.
Thanks for having me.
Philip, once again, thanks for joining our conversation and sharing your wisdom.
Yeah, I was excited to have Phil on the show and excited to hear about all of the different successes he's having there in the Mankato area, and about his site, streammyworship.com, where people can get more information and reach out to Phil if they're interested in getting his help in their congregation.
Yeah, just a couple other items that maybe we can throw out there that might be useful. He talked about Wirecast software, and he was right that there is no longer really a free version. There used to be, and now it's going to cost you a little bit to get into that game. But there are other ways for you to test the waters if you're not quite committed or don't know that you're going to commit to it. One is an open source project, a live streaming video software called OBS Project. It's at obsproject.com. Heard great things about it, and I haven't tried it, so I can't vouch for it. But just looking at their website, looks like a lot of great resources for anybody wanting to live stream. And the sources, there's software for all the platforms, Windows, Mac, Linux. And it also claims that it supports your favorite streaming platforms. One of them I actually haven't even heard of, Mixer. I'm interested to see what that's all about. Twitch and YouTube, of course. So I think one of the things that isn't mentioned here is Facebook. And if I'm not mistaken, I don't remember whether Philip brought this up or not, but to stream to Facebook, doesn't it still require a mobile device? So some of these streaming applications can't do that. So I think that would be a consideration if you're thinking, well, I'm going to stream to Facebook, that you really have to use a Facebook app to do that. I could be wrong, but I think that is the case. And maybe our listeners can correct me if I am. But OBS Studio from Open Broadcaster Software is maybe a good place to start if you're looking to kind of see what it's all about without plunking down, you know, a lot of dollars to get it going.
We'll also have a link to share to the YouTube help area where they explain live streaming and give you all the ins and outs of that. There's an online guide that you can use to get started streaming on YouTube.
Right.
And then we have a page.
Which would be another low or no cost
way to get absolutely. Into that's true. Game. And then, yeah, we have a page in our Wells yearbook that actually lists all the Wells congregations that have reported to us that they live stream services. And so if you happen to be in the need for a live stream service, this is a really great resource to look through. There's services at all different times. Some of them are in Spanish and things. So you certainly should be able to find a way to tune in to worship if you are in need of that service.
Yeah, great resources. And again, if you're interested in kind of learning a little bit more or seeing some more resources, the site that Philip propped up there for us is a great place to start, streammyworship.com. I love the domain and love the initiative to kind of get that out there, if for nothing more than just a collection of resources and things to think about. If also you have some ideas and some suggestions that you want to share from your own experiences in streaming worship or whatever it is, that would be most welcome, and we can pass that along to the kids as well. Mm-hmm. Sally, should we move along?
Yeah, I think it's time for news and tech, Martin. This is where we look at all the technology news that's breaking from the last week. And apparently there's been some announcements about communication channel, something that many people, I'm sure, are using, Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp, and Instagram messages.
Yeah, this was actually very controversial. Everybody knows Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook's CEO, had some news and maybe a focus for the company where he was talking about combining all the platforms, not necessarily the applications, but the platforms that run WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook Messenger. Which raises some antitrust, privacy, and security questions, because when those products were purchased, those apps, specifically WhatsApp and Instagram, Zuckerberg was very clear about saying, well, they're going to remain standalone, and don't worry, we're not going to cross the stream, so to speak, and everything will be good. Now it sounds like that is changing. Now there's probably a good news, bad news story here. If somebody's worried about privacy and those kinds of things, you know, a lot of that's going to come together. Those users are going to be coming together and sharing a common platform. But when you do that, that does actually maybe strengthen the ability to intercommunicate amongst those products as well. And I think that's one of the challenges. If you are not, and I just read an article on this not too long ago, touting the praises of iMessage for all the talk about the closed system that iMessage is on the iPhone platform, on the iOS platform. If you look elsewhere on other platforms or Android, it's kind of a mess. Where you have to kind of convince your friends and families to be all on the same platform. And if you've got, heaven forbid, a family that's not all Apple or not all one or the other, then you've got some tough conversations to say, well, I'm on WhatsApp or I'm on Facebook Messenger, or I'm here or I'm there. This may help that a little bit. He did promise, the article talks about end-to-end encryption being implemented, which is in WhatsApp, but I don't know that it is in Facebook Messenger. So that would bring some value to bringing these infrastructures together. So again, we'll have to see what happens. There was a you know, kind of an outcry by the WhatsApp employees saying, well, we don't want this. This is not what we signed up for, et cetera. So we'll see where this goes. But know that that's kind of going on in the background. And I, for one, would absolutely welcome more of a unified messaging system, because I do have one of these mixed families where one of my daughters is on is not on iMessage. She has an Android phone, and the other daughter has iMessage, and we kind of have to agree to disagree, and hopefully we get our messages across, because it can be a real challenge. And then sometimes just falling back to regular old SMS text messaging is not ultimately secure either, because that is not encrypted either, and then you're kind of in the hands of your telco providers too. So interesting news coming out of kind of the big players here, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that will be interesting. I always think it's funny when I get my family uses Messenger a whole lot.
Right.
My sisters and mom and I, but my kids, we actually communicate on Slack. So,
right.
You know, I've got
another
all these different
one, right.
platforms to kind of keep an eye on. And then I'll get a text through iMessage.
Right.
I can't even remember what it's called.
Right. And, Messages, I think they just call it now, yeah.
And it's from one of those people that I'm communicating with on these other channels and stuff. It's very confusing.
So. Right.
Got to keep a handle on all that.
Well, longing for the days of the thing you put a stamp on and licked and gave it to somebody and
back
it got
in the day,
delivered.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the news in tech. Let's go to news in Wells, Sally.
Sure. And I am eager to wish you a happy Chinese New Year. It is officially on Tuesday, February 5th, the Year of the Pig. And that is probably
bacon
the biggest,
for all.
The biggest thing that they celebrate. I mean, it's a huge celebration in China.
Mm-hmm.
And we have entities that are interested in doing gospel outreach in China. One of them is called 316 Now, and one of their major emphases each year from 316 Now is 15 days of prayer, and it begins on Chinese New Year and continues for 15 days because it's also the time that they celebrate their springtime celebrations and things like that. Spring Festival, I think it's called. And so this is a very important time in the lives of Chinese to celebrate and throw parties and travel and gather with their families and things like that. And it's a great time for us to put emphasis on praying for China and for that gospel outreach during these special days for those in China. And the people at 316 Now have put together posters and daily prayer guides and bulletin blurbs if you want to introduce this at your congregation perhaps this Sunday. There's even congregational prayers available to download that the pastor could use in leading group prayer on Sunday during service. All those resources are available on their website. We'll have a link in our show notes, but their base website is 316now.org. And we just encourage you to consider praying for China. You know, Martin, it struck me as I'm reading through all this, like, my prayer is so self-centered, and what a neat opportunity to become aware of their customs and important days to them as we have, you know, recently come off of our Christmas holidays and New Year's celebrations, and how important that is to us. And this is an important time for them and a good time for us to focus on this outreach in hoping to reach the millions and millions of souls that are there in China.
It's something we can do anywhere we are at. Just calling attention to it's awesome. Mm-hmm. So we'll have links to the information there. I got something actually in the mail the other day. I don't know if you, you don't get mail, but I got something from the folks at 316 now. So they're doing great things. Mm-hmm. Had a little other news in Wells, or Els, maybe. There's a new movie review that was posted on the Christ in Media Institute blog. If that sounds familiar, Christ in Media Institute, we've talked about them in the past. Professor Tom Custer and his wife Judy put together a movie review of the movie Paul, Apostle of Christ, which came out in 2018. And actually, I hadn't heard of the movie, so I'm glad I came across this blog post. And they did something, and it's a Christian film, obviously, on the life of Paul. Jim Caviezel, you may remember him as playing Christ in The Passion of the Christ, plays Paul in this particular film. And the review is kind of unique because both Professor Custer and his wife Judy do their own reviews in the same blog post. So Judy does her review, and they both had kind of different takes, which is kind of interesting too. Not necessarily male, female, but I think based on kind of their expectations going into watching the film. And I think if you are considering maybe watching it, renting it, whatever, this would be an excellent thing to read and go through. It's not a super long post, but I think they go into some sufficient detail to give you an idea of whether it's something for you or not, or if you'd want to use it for ministry purposes as well. So thanks, Tom, for sharing that. And if you're not familiar, again, with the Christ in Media Institute, go to their homepage, christinmedia.org, and find out all the great things that they're doing. They have a fall conference every year, a fall online conference every year. I hadn't remembered that they did this blog here either, but they've got other blog posts that you might be interested in as well.
Very good. Yes, always good things coming out of Christ in Media.
Yep. Right. Let's move on to our picks of the week, huh?
Yeah. And my pick of the week is somewhat techie related. It's the tech I use to write on paper. And maybe a recurring theme here on Wells Tech is that I am a fan of paper, and that I've found bullet journaling on paper to be a really productive thing for me in many ways. One of the things I'm doing this year is journaling Bible passages each day so that I am in the Word more, and it means a lot to me to actually write it down. And then I'm using the Bible passages for the upcoming Sunday's reading. So I'm preparing my heart for worship on Sunday in the process. So that's just one of the things that I do in my bullet journal, but the key to all of it is the beautiful colors and things that I get with the pens that I use. And so my pick of the week is actually a Focus on Pilot Frixon pens. And I think I've talked about these before. Actually,
yep.
I can probably credit Pastor Rob Gunther, if memory serves, as pointing me to the Frixon pen as being a really awesome pen to use. I was using their, I think it's called a G2 pen, which is a similar quality, but it's not erasable. And the secret with these Frixon pens is that they're erasable. So a year or more ago, I bought a set of what they call their color sticks, just pull the cap off and use the pen, kind of traditional pen. And I've used those, and they're still working. Haven't run out of ink in them yet, but this past Christmas, I was gifted with not one, but three different variations of Pilot Frixon pens, which I didn't even realize existed. So they actually have highlighters, they have markers, and then they have something they call a clicker, which is a more like a click ballpoint kind of pen. But all three of those, again, are erasable. And it's just up the ante on my bullet journaling to have all these colors and all these different types of media to be able to do the marker thing, or the highlighting is almost like a colorer. And I have really enjoyed the variety. The price tag can it is more expensive than traditional pens because they are erasable, but it's worth it, at least to me. I've been very pleased with them, and I'm also very happy that when I make mistakes, which can be quite frequent, that I now don't have to worry about that. I can erase them. So highly recommend all the different varieties of Frixon pens. I found some at Target. I found some at, I want to say, Hobby Lobby was carrying some, and even Michael's. So because they have a lot of scrapbooky kind of things, maybe that's why they're into
that. So these aren't used just for their erasability or used with this this ecosystem.
No, I think you can use them all over the place, and they look very much like traditional pens. I wouldn't necessarily address mail with them or sign legal documents with them.
Okay.
But otherwise, there's really no difference in a traditional pen, except they are erasable. So it's a friction erasing. It's not like the type of eraser on a pencil, but they can be erased very cleanly and without damaging the paper or anything like that. So just wanted to put a plug in for my favorite pens and all the varieties they come in.
And what notebook are you using these days with them?
Oh, I use a bunch of different notebooks, but my primary notebook is an Erin Condren notebook. That's what I do my daily planning and things like that in. And then I have separate little simple notebooks that I bought at Office Max, I think, that are, I like the grid paper. I can do a lot of creative things with the grid paper. So that's what I'm using just for like my Bible journaling and different other journaling that I'm doing. So I don't keep it all in one notebook, and maybe true bullet journalers would not like that. But for me, I like having the distinction between more task oriented things versus just journaling for
whatever
for
works.
My own pleasure. So
make it fun too. Yep. That's the way you stick with it too.
Fun and colorful. It's so exciting.
Nice. Frixon by Pilot.
Yes.
Long time name in pens. So all right. Speaking of highlighters, that is one of my picks. Last week I talked about a Chrome extension. This week is also a Chrome extension. This one is called Highly Highlighter. So way back when I was a big time Digo user, one of the things I really liked about it was its ability to kind of annotate, what they called annotating the web, where you could highlight, make notes on, attach post-it notes, those kinds of things. And then when I fell off the Digo bandwagon because they went more commercial and started charging for some of these features, I was kind of stuck because I really liked the ability to highlight the web for a lot of different reasons. One, for personal notation, so I could look at an article and just kind of remember the things that I thought were relevant that I could use later in a blog post or some kind of educational platform. And then the other side is kind of the sharing piece. So being able to highlight different areas of a blog post or a web page and then sharing that content with others rather than just saying, here's a link to this, 5,000 word whatever. And I was interested in paragraph 3, or I think you'll find that this is an interesting comment, whatever. So what I found, there's a bunch of them out there, but this one seems to be very highly rated, Highly Highlighter. And it works just as you might expect. It's a little plug-in, and when you come to a page that you want to annotate, you click the button, and you have the ability to
basically run, you know, the cursor becomes a little I-beam, and you click and drag over the things that you want to highlight, and it just provides some nice tooling, because when you have to create an account, and then when you have your account, it allows you to get back into it and see all of the things that you have highlighted, and you can share them from there. You can share them in a lot of different ways. You can share them on Slack. You can share them on Twitter by email, get a link, and when you send a link to somebody, they can click on it, and they'll go directly to the highlighted section, and they have the ability to sign up if they want, but they don't have to. Or they can see the entire article or piece of content with just a button click as well, which there's just a little view in context button or something like that. And there's a lot of options here, and it's kind of a lightweight way to, again, annotate the web. And I really like the way they've implemented it. Again, it's free. They do have a premium service, which gives you greater shareability, although I haven't really found the need for that. It's available on iPhone, iPad, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, and Slack, which I find interesting as well, although I'm not a huge Slack user. So if you're interested in something, I can envision application for teachers especially who want to reference material and put this on kind of a reading list, but then not just say here's the whole article, but highlight different areas that they want them to pay specific attention to. Again, it's on all these platforms. Highly highlighter. Chrome extension.
Excellent. And it's not slowing down your browsing experience.
It hasn't. No, because you can turn it on and off. It just is a little highlighter that appears in your browser. And that you can actually, there's a keyboard shortcut. Just you hit the exclamation point, which by itself looks like a little marker or highlighter, which is very intuitive. And then your little, what is normally an arrow, you know, when you're moving your mouse around, turns into a little highlighter icon, so you know that you've got the tool loaded, and then you can highlight, unhighlight, and you can share right from there. So, very cool tool.
Excellent.
All right, let's go on to our ministry resource. This is a section where we try and find something that has direct application for people in ministry, some kind of tool, website, resource. What did we come up with for this week, Sally?
Well, it is a website. It is a website we've talked about probably many times on Wells Tech in the past, but worth shining a spotlight on yet again, just to remind people of it or to introduce new people that aren't aware of it to the site. The site is called Free Bible Images. You can find it at freebibleimages.org. And you'll never guess what's on the site. It's got free Bible images, and not just one or two. They have collections of images around Bible stories or characters or themes, and there are 780 of these sets of images.
Right, not just images, but sets of them, yep.
Right, exactly. And the images are in all different formats and really for all different age levels and things. So they have cartoony, very basic images that you could use with preschoolers even, all the way up to photography of different Bible stories, like where they've done photographs on movie sets and things like that, acting out different Bible stories or whatever. Some of the illustrations that are out there are like pen and ink type drawings, just extremely detailed and very well done. So you definitely can find a variety there. It's very easy to search. I mentioned you can search by Book of the Bible, themes such as Christmas or Easter, or things like parables or prayer or worship. There's tons and tons of themes that they've outlined here. You can also search for particular people or characters in the Bible, like the prodigal son or John the Baptist or Elijah or whoever you're looking for. And again, just a very vast list. Kevin and I just had a discussion the other day about Ehud. Ehud. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you say it. Ehud.
Yep.
And I even found Ehud on the list, who was an assassin that killed an evil king. Just kind of a lesser known Old Testament character, but there he's even in the list. So all kinds of characters listed there. And then they also have a way to look at just the photographs versus just the illustrations. As you drill down and find a lesson that you're interested in or a collection of photos you're interested in, there's the ability to download them in multiple formats. They make available PowerPoint and Keynote formats, as well as PDF and JPEG. So just a one-click download. You don't have to create an account on their site or anything. It's very, very easy to download what you're looking for. They also make something available called a story planner, where they have a little written narrative for each of the images that's part of the collection. So, you know, even if you don't use it, it's good to have an idea of what part of the story they're trying to illustrate, if something doesn't make sense to you or whatever. So that story planner is just an added bonus. I will tell you, they make these available for free to use for teaching purposes, and they're very emphatic on their site throughout all their terms of agreements and things like that. They say for Christian teaching purposes, they are not allowed to be used according to their, you know, requirements and things for things that are against the Christian faith or whatever. They do have a variety of artists that are contributing these resources to the site, and they are allowed to specify the copyright conditions on each of the sets. Globally, they say that you can use one or two images from the set on a website or for illustrative purposes, you know, in a published way, but you can't make money off of them, and you can't publish an entire set, which would allow someone to get the set from you instead of from the Free Bible Images website. And then beyond that, like I said, each artist can kind of specify whether it can be used for commercial purposes or not and things like that. And there's actually a link on each set that says the Creative Commons licensing for the particular set. So it might be just by attribution that you can do whatever you want, or it might be non-commercial or whatever variants of the copyright that's determined by the artist who submits the set for inclusion on the site. So I think that's a pretty good rundown on Free Bible Images. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot one more thing. They have a slideshow feature right there on the website. Right. So if you don't want to download it at all, you can just bring up this website during your Bible class or Sunday school lesson or whatever and turn on the slideshow right there from the website and just show it that way. So they make it so easy and in so many different formats and of certainly of very high quality. I think you'll be impressed with the site.
Very good. Learned something today. Ehud was a left-handed man, apparently.
That's right, so. A left-handed assassin.
Yeah. I don't know if that has any significance, but
that's what the Bible says.
Be careful with left-handed people.
God wrote it in there for a reason.
That's right. That's right. Figure that one out. All right. Very good. That's our ministry resource. It is now time to go to community feedback. Quite a few things to share here this week.
Yeah, the first thing, Martin, is something about information security. I want to say you're familiar with this document.
Let's start there. Yeah, absolutely. So via Aaron Wakeman, who is the executive director of Friends of China, speaking of China, he was in the other week, and I just did a quick talk with them and some other advancement directors who were in for some training. And the next week, he followed up with me and shared a resource written by, I think, one of his members, Peter Sahlstrom. And it is a resource that I thought was well done and worth sharing. It's called Security Thoughts for Those in Need. It's kind of written as a / research paper, information white paper. It has footnotes and the whole thing. But I thought the content was written so that almost anybody who cares about security could read it and get a sense for some of the things that they should be thinking about, or if they are maybe in charge of security at their church or school, would might, you know, something that could be shared. It talks about using password managers, password strength, secure storage, two-factor authentication, VPNs, disk encryption, doing risk assessments, physical security, and just some other miscellaneous thoughts that thought well done. It's not super long. It's 6 pages. No pictures, but lots of good reference links. And I think he does a nice job of walking you through some of the considerations for keeping things secure and safe. So wanted to just pass that along. There'll be a link to a Google Doc. He comes at it, obviously, from a Christian perspective. He's been a Lutheran his entire life and Wells member for the last 18 years and decided to make this available. And I think you'll enjoy it if you want to take a look at some thoughts on security by Peter. So thanks for sharing that, Aaron and Peter.
That's awesome. All right. Next up, we have a collection of things to make mention of from the Wells Intersections Facebook group. Just hats off to Pastor James Aderman, who moderates the group, who started the group from scratch after our Wells Tech conference in 2015, and I think it's grown to over 350 people. It's a very active community now. Mm-hmm. If you aren't a part of it, just search on Facebook for Wells Intersections, and you can join and get in on the conversations there. There's a lot of good discussion, and I wanted to point out a few of those today. First up, an article that was shared titled "New Report Looks at Optimal Facebook Posting Practices in 2019," and basically a think tank analyzed 777 million page posts from 2018 on Facebook and determined things like optimal length and post type. So here's what it says. It says video is the best performing post type. No surprise there, and something that we probably all could get a little bit better at and make more use of. Evenings are the best time to post, and I think I typically post when it's most convenient for me, but right. I also consume at night and on the weekends. And the next tip or point was that weekends see the most engagement when people have downtime. That's when right. they can do that kind of stuff. And then shorter posts perform better, so don't get too long-winded if you're posting on Facebook, so... interesting points to kind of keep in mind. There was also a discussion in the group about target audience for Facebook ads, and people were sharing their experience with using Facebook advertising for their church, and it really kind of ran the full gamut. There were people that said, we quit doing it altogether. We didn't see any value in doing Facebook advertising. Other people said that they've had good success for event-type things like VBS soccer camp, fall and Easter festivals. They have advertised things like there'll be a giveaway at the event, so that tends to get more attention in things. I think one of them said they gave away a tablet device at the event, so you had to come to the event to be part of the giveaway program, but they advertised that and drew interest that way. Someone shared that they used the C18 resources. We talked about those last November and December. Those were available for use. There was even a video that you could share. This person said they spent $30 on Facebook advertising, and they had three families that they know of that attended their services on Christmas Eve because of the advertising. They told them they saw the ad on Facebook or whatever. So, you know, definitely some people that have had success with it, and others that don't really care for that platform of advertising. So interesting discussion there.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, there was another interesting discussion just recently about podcasting. Pastor Aderman kind of posed a question as he was sharing Pastor Peter Hagen's daily podcast that he's doing. It's a devotional podcast, Raised with Jesus, from Resurrection Lutheran Church in Malmy, Ohio. We've talked about this in recent weeks on our show. And Pastor Aderman said, how might a podcast support your church's ministry? And a lot of different people kind of chipped into the conversation. Eventually, Pastor Hagen revealed you know, the process that he used. So I thought this was really valuable to share. He said he set up a template in GarageBand on his Mac that adjusted for his vocal tone and has the buffer music as track two. And for the most part, he just record straight through on the fly, occasionally stopping to re-record a portion. When he gets to the end, it's just export and upload. Total time, maybe 15 or 20 minutes each day. Just going off download numbers, we have a larger audience each day of the week via podcast than we do people in worship most Sundays. So I'd say that's a successful effort.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
Good stewardship there.
So, and Pastor Peter Hagen has also been working in our wiki to supply us with some commercial type things of recommending other podcasts and things on your podcast. So you can download some audio and insert it into your own podcast that promotes some of the other Wells and Els podcasts that are available. And this week we specifically wanted to play the commercial for his Raised with Jesus podcast.
You're invited to check out the Raised with Jesus podcast, 10 minutes every day where the life of Jesus meets yours. Monday through Friday, we've got a daily Bible reading. Saturday, we usually have a study Saturday with an outside source, and then a Sunday morning preview of that day's scripture readings and gospel lesson. Again, the Raised with Jesus podcast, 10 minutes every day where the life of Jesus meets yours.
One last mention about Pastor Hagen. He wrote to me to let me know he got an ATR 1000 or whatever the microphone is.
2100?
2100, that would be the one. And he is really happy with the results and the Good. Difference it made in his podcasting. He just got that last week, and he is seeing some positive results with his audio. So.
All right, yeah. And those of you that haven't heard that, that's one of the ones that we recommend for podcasting. In fact, that's what Sally's speaking into as we speak.
Very affordable as well.
Yep. So yeah, about $60, something like that.
Mm-hmm. One more mention from the Wells Intersections Group. This is just for those of you that are into audio. Yellowstone National Park has a free sound library. So if you're looking for some background nature sounds, you can find all kinds of things there. I had fun listening to what eagles sound like. And they have some that are just like morning chatter or something like that. And it's just beautiful to hear nature coming to life and stuff. So those sound files are available for free download, and you could incorporate them into some of your audio work if needed.
You probably get a little bit of that just by opening your door, don't you, Sally?
Yeah, we definitely are part
kind
of
living
it.
In nature.
The
so
flora, fauna. Spectrum.
All right. All right. That's enough for community feedback. If you want to contribute, there are lots of different ways to do that. Go to our show notes page. First and foremost, wellstech.wells.net. See all the links there for the social media that we're in, or leave a comment on one of the shows. Also, wellstech@wells.net is a way to email us, or there's a little button on our show notes page to leave us a voicemail. Love to get those as well. So take advantage of that and join the conversation. Sally, video of the week.
Our video goes back to our interview with Phil Wells. We're going to just feature the Peace Lutheran Els Congregation from North Mankato, Minnesota, and point you to their live streaming page, their sermon archive page, and actually include their sermon video from this past February 3rd, Sunday. And you can see what it's like with the PTZ's cameras that they're using there, see what kind of results they're getting.
Very good. Thanks again to Philip for sharing that with us. Coming up next week, you may have remembered from last month, we began to talk a little bit about building intranets, and we're going to get very pragmatic, very practical next week, talking about building an intranet using Google Sites. So if you're interested in learning what an intranet is all about, how it might help you, your ministry, your congregation, or school's ministry, Google Sites is the tool we're going to kick the tires on and see how it goes. So tune in next week for that. That's going to about do it for episode 587, and we hope you tune into 588 and bring a friend. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.